Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Fill her up.
You're listening to the Gas Digital Network.
What is up, my fellow addicts? Ralph Sutton, Big J Okerson, and Emil Hirsch. You might remember him from Into the Wild. He has a great new movie out now called The Immaculate Room. If you were a fan of his, you could have heard this or seen this show 5 days early at GasDigitalNetwork.com. The code is SDR to get 20% off. I believe that deal is done where you get locked in, but you can get in now and still see every episode we've ever done, get everything in HD, and get it all commercial-free with a live chat happening twice a week and the 22 other shows on the network. Here it is right now. The Emil Hirsch episode of The SDR Show.
This is the intro to the shit show. Sex, drugs, and rock and roll. This is a hit show. Show me a tit show. Please, someone fuck the host. It's weed, I beat, it's hookers and blow. It's art, you need to know. The SDR Show. Let's go.
It is The SDR Show, sex, drugs, and rock and roll show. I am Ralph Sutton. With me, very often, but rarely on the Zoom, Big J Okerson. How are you, buddy?
Hey, buddy.
So this is what happens. You know, I get these emails that, hey, a potential guest is coming on, blah, blah, blah. And then I send out, hey, Emil Hirsch can come on. You're like, oh, shit. I love that dude. I'm like, All right, let's get this guy on. You know him maybe from Into the Wild, Lords of Dogtown, Alpha Dog, The Girl Next Door, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, and now this brand new movie that we both watched, The Immaculate Room, with him and Kate Bosworth. It is Emil Hirsch, who, by the way, has a private Instagram because that's how he rolls. How are you, sir?
Good. Thank you.
Have you always had your Instagram on private?
No, not always. But, like, I guess I just was like, the other day, I was like, I just make it private because it's like, I don't want people, like, if someone's going to, like, snoop around, they might as well just follow you.
Right. So you mean like me looking to do some show prep, but that, oh, shit, the dude's private. Exactly that.
Fucking you so hard. Exactly. Now I know why you asked the question.
So first we'll start with the new movie, because I was fascinated by the concept. And just if you don't know, the movie's called The Immaculate Room with you and Kate Bosworth. The concept of the movie is, would you spend, or what happens when someone spends 50 days in a room with their significant other, or with anybody, I guess. They don't really address if it has to be a couple, but if you make it through, you get $5 million. No TV, no internet, just the two of you. Initially, I thought to myself, it's just like that TV show Alone, but they have to build shit, and they don't get provided food and heat and warmth. But what I realized, the idea of not having anything to do is what also makes you crazy. So my question is, how much of the time on the set were you just in solitude, in silence with you and Kate to feel that vibe of, you know, aloneness, so to speak?
I think like a healthy amount, but not an unhealthy amount. We weren't like artificially in our little white corners, not talking or something like that. We still had a good time.
All right, so I read somewhere that you said it was the most fun you've had on a movie set in a very long time.
I mean, you did?
Yeah, I did. I was surprised.
We had a really good time, for sure. We were right in Los Angeles, and I think what made the experience fun, as my prior quote would lead us to believe, was just that the scenes were well written and they were fun to play as an actor. You know, there was a lot of meat on the bone for the scenes, and the way that the room was constructed was super spare and simple, but kind of, it also, I think it focused us as actors. And I was working on a film in Guatemala and I wrapped the movie on a Friday and I was shooting on Monday.
Damn.
So I had like zero prep at all for this film, which ended up weirdly being an advantage because I just had enough. I just had enough time to like learn the material,
mm-hmm.
and then was like sort of like living it as I went along. It wasn't, because sometimes what happens is actors will have like too much time in advance, and they'll do like a certain amount of research where it makes them comfortable with the role. But mm-hmm. then there's this extra time period where they add all their like BS to like their performance, and like they make it just that little extra bit fake or artificial. And I just, in this, it wasn't like I didn't do it. I just didn't have the time to get to that part. So
right.
it ended up making the performance a bit more stripped down than I think it would have been.
What kind of research did you do? Did you watch like movies about people not getting along in silence? Like how did you research this role, so to speak?
I mean, the research was really just putting myself, there was no research.
Okay.
There was no research. The research was only trying to nail down what type of guy in my mind I thought Mike was.
Right.
And he was a happy-go-lucky guy on the surface whose, you know, happy-go-luckiness is kind of masking a lot of pain from his past.
Right, which they kind of tease out throughout the movie, which I don't want to give away too much. Go ahead, Jay.
I was going to ask, I felt like, I'm sure you've done a bunch of plays as an actor before. That's what I felt like, this could be like equally as good a play, because it really is just like a character study into these two people. I thought that was very interesting.
There was definitely aspects of it which have like play elements. I mean, the main thing that I responded to when I first read the script was how engaging the script was. And I think that with a, you know, two or three hander movie like this, the big risk is that it's boring. You know, that's like your number one issue you're going to have.
Right.
So I thought it was a real testament to the script that they were able to find the story and keep it engaging enough to where it didn't become that way.
It also puts a lot more, I feel, on the actor, because there's no special effects. There's no this, there's no that. It's just you guys, for the most part, it's the two of you, and the room itself almost becomes a character because there's a voice.
Yeah. And I was actually really impressed with Mukunda's direction. The way that he lit the room and choreographed the camera and everything, it did have a sort of otherworldly feel to it. And the way that that computer voice would kind of come in and out, it almost felt like, you know, HAL in 2001 right. or something like that. Like this kind of like not chill robot presence.
And what I loved is apparently, and I'm sure you're aware of this, but the inspiration, Mukunda spent a 7-day retreat somewhere doing a vow of silence, and how much it fucked with his head was the inspiration for the movie. That's fucking wild.
Yeah, I mean, Mukunda is like a super spiritually in tune dude. I think he like lived on like a monastery for years and years, and like he's just like that spiritual dude, not wearing shoes, and you know, he's just rocking. You know, he's just like.
I have a question related to your character, because I see the picture behind you. Are you, your character, it's not a spoiler to say the character is an artist. Do you do art yourself?
You know, I have done a lot of it in the past. It's been a while since I've actively like painted and stuff. But I've done a lot of like music lately and like writing and stuff. So I used to do a lot more paintings.
He said before you came in that is the
demon puking in the toilet. Here
is there a name? Is it called Demon Puking in Toilet, or is there a more esoteric name to it?
I don't actually know if it has a name.
Oh, I like
this demon is puking old, in this is like 12 years old or something.
Oh, that's really funny.
I was gonna say, were you was it told what you were going to like do as art in the movie? Or did you kind of like just play with it yourself? It was just like,
I just use all played the space. Around with it. Yeah, I just sort of made it up as I went along.
He said that he wrote the role of Kate for Kate. Did he wrote that role for you, or were you asked to be in it?
No,
he
definitely didn't write it for me. No.
Okay.
And it was, I mean, Mike, if you know me, you know that he didn't write it for me. That's what's funny.
In a question about your history of movies, what I thought was, you know, with the exception of Girl Next Door, which was the first thing I think most people kind of like got familiar with you, and you were a kid, it seemed like beyond that movie, you've taken, I mean, I'm a comedian, so they, of course, forced me to like go on acting auditions a lot. And it's a lot of comedy stuff that I'm never that excited about doing. And what I always thought was cool about your career, it seems like I'd have to assume you really pick like what you, I know you audition, I'm sure, but I mean like before you got offered roles, but like, it seems like you do the coolest fucking movie. Like you get to play Lords of Dogtown. Alpha Dog was unbelievable. You get the Autopsy of Jane Doe. Like there's such a,
well, that guy's like, kind fun of a movie. Austin Tilden, the morgue worker. He's kind of dorky in Jane Doe, isn't he? He's got that dorky haircut.
Yeah, but not even like the characters. I mean, like the feeling of the movies, like dark, like indie drama feel that I think are like, to me, those are my favorite kind of movies to watch. Like kind of the twisted flicks, and you end up in a lot of them that I think are so. And I said you get to play such like fun characters. I mean, also good.
Several of your movies were based on, I mean, real people. A lot of them, like Into the Wild and Milk, those are real people that you're playing. That's got to be a different way to tackle a character.
Yeah, Cleve Jones and Chris McCandless and Milk and Into the Wild. I mean, there's definitely a separate kind of pressure when you're playing a real life person. And then Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, I was playing Jay Sebring, but Quentin Tarantino didn't want me to watch a bunch of videos about Jay Sebring and then play that, what I saw in the videos. He wanted me to more embody more of like the spirit as opposed to like trying to play the exact guy.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause he felt like me bringing my own quality of that likability that he thought Jay Sebring had, he mm-hmm. wanted that more than like the closer to the real life guy, me trying to do that.
Is it fun when you do like Alpha Dog, you know, because it's a real guy also you're playing, but you don't really have to honor the person with the performance. He's a piece of shit. So,
well, yeah, well, I never met him and I didn't like know him or anything like that. So, that's different because he wasn't like a public guy, I guess. I guess McCandless mm-hmm. was not super known, but there was that book about him that was written. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. Yeah, and he's still in jail, I guess. Jesse James Hollywood. But Alpha Dog is a little different because I'm actually not playing Jesse James Hollywood. I'm actually I'm playing Johnny Truelove. They actually changed the name. So
Yeah, it's more based on the true characters rather than being them.
Yeah, I mean, it's more inspired by the true story in that because they changed all the names. So we're not those characters because we don't have, I mean, if we were those characters, we would have the names. So
what a legendary fucking cast, man. I mean, really, Ben Foster.
Foster's so good in it. And Timberlake's great. And Anton Yelchin's great.
The late Anton Yelchin, who was phenomenal in everything. Yeah, what a crazy, yeah, Justin Timberlake. That was almost the turning of everyone going, like, especially, you know, I'm 44, so growing up in the 90s, of course, like Justin Timberlake was like the joke, the girls liked him, and then he's jumping over to acting, and you're like, damn, son of a bitch, is like, sucks to be that good looking and a triple threat.
Like, yeah, you know, that was like the cool movie he did.
When you were in American Night, fucking Jonathan Rhys-Meyers, one of the best fucking looking guys on the planet. And he's so talented, that guy, too.
Oh, yeah. American Night was such a crazy production. That was so much fun to make that movie.
I mean, he was in Velvet Goldmine. That was such a great movie. And he was so cool in that movie. Yeah, just such a cool dude. Jay always makes fun of me when I'm wrong about doing research. So if I'm wrong about this, Jay's going to love it. But maybe I'm right. You saw Home Alone when you were six, which made you want to get into acting. But some family member, I don't know who, were teachers on movie sets.
Yes.
And they said to you, oh, you can do this too. And that's how that started. Is that right?
Yes, that is correct. My dad's uncle
Your dad's uncle. So your granduncle, great uncle, whatever the fuck that would be.
Is
that
right? Him and his wife were famous studio teachers based in Malibu, California. So we would go up and visit them when I was a kid, and they would like tell stories about like, oh, we worked with so-and-so on a, like a cookie commercial, and so-and-so had a commercial and this and this. And I had just seen Home Alone, and I was like, man, how do I get into this racket?
And
they were like, oh yeah, you can do it. And it was funny because one of them was like, oh, don't do it, don't do it. And then the other one was like, oh, he could do it, he could do it. Yeah. And that's
cool.
Kind of funny. That's like, that's really like that gave me like the little like toehold in.
Sorry, go ahead, Jay.
I was gonna ask if you were an LA kid. Were you you're California?
Yeah, LA.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Were they able to help get you auditions, or they just gave you the confidence to go out and do auditions?
I think they were just more like encouraging. I don't think that they actually like did anything.
Now, the wild thing, using the pun intended, we are days away from 15 years ago to the day that Into the Wild came out, which is pretty, you know, wild technically.
Are we really?
Yeah. September 21st is will be 15 years.
Wow.
Yeah, which is crazy. And you said
Ralph celebrates the anniversary of it every year. That's why he knows.
Yeah. I go out into the wilderness.
I've got to say, I've only made it to 5 or 6 of his Into the Wild parties.
But I try to do research, you know, but I read that you were 156 when you got the audition. And at some point you went down to 124 to the point where you're doing spin classes, multiple spin classes a day. And you didn't have enough strength to do long scenes. You're like, oh, I got like an hour in me before I'm going to pass out. Is that right?
You were right, except it wasn't 124. It was 156 down to 115.
Oh, wow. All right, I was close enough. I'll allow it. I'll still consider my research to be pretty good there. But that's crazy because you're
going to have to argue with you there on that one, Ralph. You were dead wrong.
Now, that's something that did you feel like super? You did feel super weak.
If I had made my Instagram account public, maybe I wouldn't fucked you though so hard.
Yeah, that's, I would have had the info.
Ralph still holds it against me that I did. Sorry, Ralph. Sorry, I didn't approve you in time.
Yeah, that'd be great if that was all your research. He goes, so Emil, I see you crushed a pretty awesome burger the other day at Smash Burger.
Yeah, exactly. All right, before we go any further, this happens to me all the time. People always ask me, do you know a guy for this? Do you have a guy for that? I need a dentist. I need a this. Maybe you need a guy for your car. Well, guess what? You can be that guy if you go to rockauto.com. They've been in the business for 20 years, and every part you're looking for is going to be available there at rockauto.com, and it's going to be in stock at reliably low prices. How confident are they in their prices? They don't even have a discount code. They know that once you go there, you're going to be like, holy shit, this is my new home for everything auto parts. It is rockauto.com. If you've got a car, if you're a car store, if you are an auto parts store, or maybe you are a mechanic, anybody who loves cars is just going to enjoy checking out rockauto.com. I will tell you this, Big Jay Oakerson already told me, he bought a few things off of rockauto.com because you just go there, you start perusing, and you're like, oh my goodness, who knew I needed this? And before you know it, you are a fan, just like we are, of rockauto.com. When you buy something, tell them you heard about them on the SDR show. All right, let's get back into it. So you said, though, that that's the movie that people reach out the most to still 15 years later, right?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, but that's almost like, Into the Wild, it's like, it's not even like a movie to people. It's like a way of life or like a philosophy, you know? Mm-hmm. I mean, I have a lot of friends that are, you know, very well-known actors as well. And like, even among people like that, you know, it's rare that you have a movie that people lock onto in that particular specific way. You know what I mean? It's like the evergreen movie. It's weird.
Right. And so early in your career, relatively early, to be so synonymous with you for the rest of your life is pretty wild. That usually doesn't happen that way. It takes years to get those chops before, you know, it's kind of wild. You know?
Yeah. I mean, it's like, yeah. I mean, people finish that movie and it's very hard for them to shake that impression of me.
Right. For sure. That's pretty wild. So now, the other thing that I found interesting, I just want to ask you, you recently delved into, which we talked a little bit off air, and I think it's now 2 years ago, into music, where you're releasing music as a, I think the album, it's called Hirsch, right? And my first question would be, knowing the stigma, because Jay mentioned it before, with a musician going into acting with Justin Timberlake, there's always going to be that, all right, what the fuck is this guy going to do with an actor going into music? Is it something that you wanted to do years ago that you just held on to because you didn't want to deal with any prejudgments? Or is it something that now, 2019, like, all righty, I'm in the mood to put out music now?
I mean, I think it was like I had been interested in lyric writing and like rap and like high school and middle school and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I did this movie with J.K. Simmons called All Nighter.
Mm-hmm.
And I was playing like a bluegrass guy. And so I played one of the cover songs for one of my friends and they were like, oh, why don't you record some originals?
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, so I had this, these real musicians in this band. So I wrote a few songs and they were down to go in and record them. And then we ended up making like a full bluegrass album after the movie
mm-hmm.
with the name of the band, like from the movie. And then we parted ways and I still was enjoying songwriting aspects. So I found this French dude named Mathieu Carretier, who's like a former journalist for movie magazine in France, Premiere magazine in France. He was like a journalist who was also interested in music, but he had like a lot of, he was very talented, like electronically.
Mm-hmm.
And we kind of got together and I wrote a few songs and he kind of made some instrumentals for him and we got along and yeah, we ended up like getting into a routine where I would like go over to his place and I would like write some songs and then we would like build out instrumentals around it.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes he would build them out almost alone and then other times I would be there pretty much for the whole process. And we ended up making, you know, it's kind of like 80s-ish pop. Kind of, you know, like electro pop.
Yeah, I'd say electro or synth. It has the newest single that came out was a synth wave
kind of vibe to it.
And we made Killer Bees, right? The newest song is Killer Bees.
Killer Bees, yeah. You know, we put out a couple albums now, mm-hmm. Two of them. And then there's like, you know, 8 new songs on the third album, which we're like slowly cobbling together. But I mean, for me, with like, it's just a creative outlet. It wasn't like a career.
Mm-hmm. And but like, are you more nervous about the critique of that? Because when you do movies, you're doing generally someone else's material that you're bringing to life. So they can still critique your work, but they're not really critiquing. Do you know what I mean? Like, this is all you. Like, it's your words. Like, are you worried? Do you worry about like embarrassment of people not liking it if they don't?
No, not at all. Nice. Not at all. I mean, we've been fortunate to where like we had a couple like critic-y type people listen to it and like it.
Nice.
But I don't, it's just like, it's so like not big in a way that like even if we got a horrible review, like nobody would fucking know. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's like, it doesn't really matter.
You know? It's such an earnest thing that there's no escape into. Like I've always said, like I think there's a in comedy, I feel like there's like a pouring out. It's like a it's like a cathartic kind of therapeutic thing to get stuff out and funny, but you're taking the piss out of it, you know, like you're kind of getting people to laugh at it. To get people to be moved by something, I think is so much more scary. It requires like a confidence in yourself that like I don't know if I have. Like if I can put down like I said, like I've always said, like, I couldn't see putting down to paper, like, she's like the wind through my trees and not laughing. Although when I hear emotional lyrics, like, they hit me. Like, they hit me when other people do them, but I couldn't imagine pouring into that like that.
Yeah. I mean, for whatever reason, I've kind of done it. But I totally get why it's also funny, too. And when other actors do music pretty much uniformly, I always think it's funny. So it's like, yeah. And the thing is, there's no real exception to the rule. Like, I'm sure on some level, I'm that guy as well. But the thing is like, I just don't, honestly, I just don't like care that much. So it's mm-hmm. like, I don't know. I think originally when I put out the Bluegrass album 6 years ago, something like that now, which is insane that that's that long ago. I had a lot of those feelings. I had a lot of like nervousness and, oh God, what are they going to think? And like, I really had the like butterflies in my stomach. And I think what really quelled it is like when we put it out and you realize that like, you're just another person putting out an album onto like the endless void of the internet.
Yeah.
And like, you put it out and you're like, it's out. And then it's like, you hear crickets. And then you're like, oh, I can't believe I was like worried about it.
No, did you have to starting acting so young and getting into that? Did you have to deal with any critical negativity to like you, forgetting like the movie, but like someone coming at you being young? Cause that's got to be tough to get through too. Like someone really just,
I feel like
they stunk.
I feel like most critics are probably treat kids with kid gloves to a certain degree. Like, you know, like you'd have to really be a fucking asshole critic to like just like light some teenager up, be like, this pimple faced cardboard dork.
I mean, you know, Perez
like,
Hilton
really
used
to be, you know, Perez, critics are kind of mean, but you really have to be a jerk to do that.
But just the internet in general, I mean, like that Perez Hilton, I remember there used to get shit because he would like call like people's kids ugly and stuff.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, there were a couple of journalists that were like crazy mean. I remember there was this one lady, and she would write like the most awful stuff imaginable, and I remember being like, wow, that is so messed up. And it's funny because like all these people now, like Perez Hilton, years later they have to like account for like the horrible stuff that they would write about people. Cause it's like, if they were writing terrible stuff about me based on not even really knowing me at all, they're writing about a lot of people. Cause that was their bread and butter. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so it's just, it's kind of funny now. Cause it's like, we live in the much more like accountable age. Everyone has to like go back and like make their apologies and like cover their tracks, especially a lot of those people.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
I have a question on the going back to the music. If it starts to pick up even more where you're getting notoriety for it, would you go out and do shows, or have you done shows, or is that?
I've never
played
live. The thing is like, I would have to do, no joke, 6 months of voice lessons.
Because you said in an interview, you can't sing and you don't play an instrument. You said in an interview. Yeah.
I don't play an instrument, and I guess technically I can sing, but I don't know if I could sing at the level that you would really need to be proficient live.
Mm-hmm. So is there a caveat that would, not a caveat, is there something that would happen? They'd be like, yeah, let's go out and do a tour. Is there something that would make you want to do that, or you don't want to even think about doing that?
I mean, there's a whole wing of musicians that will never play live. And they say this, they go, well, I'd play live if there was like a demand for it. They all say that. And it's like, well, what does that mean? It's like, well, you know, if I put out a song on the internet and it like blew up and was the biggest song ever, and I just had all the fans begging me to play live. It's like, that never happens. Like, I mean, that like, that's like ensuring that you never play live, you know? No, the way that you play live is if you say, I want to play live, and you do the work and the voice lessons, right, and then you like slog through it for, you know, however long. And then eventually you start to like get good. It's not.
So you don't have that bug. You don't have that interest, right? That's what it is. You don't have that.
I think it would be fun, but it is a special type of time commitment. And there are just, you know, I guess because I'm not like a naturally gifted singer.
Mm-hmm. Join the club.
Yeah. It's, you know, it's like, it's fun to write, but like to go and sing. And I mean, I don't know.
It's so funny how much I might rather sing than write the lyrics. I'd rather just sing it.
If someone else, you're probably a singer, right?
Jake can sing better than the average person.
But
But
it is funny to see, like, I mean, what that must, like you're saying about the training and stuff. I went to go see Rage again last night, Ralph, at the Garden.
Oh, I heard it was so good live. Oh, I'm so jealous.
It was unbelievable. But I mean, to talk about a guy who can control Madison Square Garden, you know, his foot's broken.
Yeah.
So he's essentially sitting the entire show.
Right.
They have to carry him out and carry him onto the stage, and they kind of place him on this car. And that guy, I mean, after all those years singing those songs of like Rebellion, and like, again, it's like with the energy of it still, do you know what I mean? And it's like he sang these songs 1,000 times. It's pretty impressive to do. I mean, really working up an all-white crowd on his side while he's showing the most terrible white people crimes on the screen.
Oh, wow.
It's really.
I've heard is it was incredible, those shows. I'm so mad I didn't go.
Mike Feeney was with me on one of them, and it was so funny when he was like, when he was singing like the fuck no, I won't do what you tell me.
Yeah.
Mike leans in and he goes, however, Chase Bank requires that we have a heart out at 11 p.m. So if you guys wouldn't mind, that's when the union kicks into overtime. You can't help but be corporate if you're going to perform at that level.
No, yeah, you can't.
There's an upcoming movie I looked at that you're doing, and I just wonder if you had any direct scenes with him, because the movie's not out yet. The movie's called Gemini Lounge. And Bo Dietl is in it. Bo was on my network, the network that we have here. And I have many days that I've spent hanging out with Bo Dietl. And I'm curious, did you have any scenes with him, or is he just in the movie also?
No, all of Bo's scenes are with me.
Oh, that's great. He was on. So I own the network here. He had a show on the network for like 2 years. And he's just such a larger than life character. What a wild
dude. He's so good in the movie, too. He's so good.
That's great. Yeah. He's still doing his podcast.
They just like release him and he just goes. He's just like a tornado, and then just like capturing Bo, and then the editor is just like.
I also love what Bo Dietl is, and like meeting him and spending time with him after seeing the movie about him, played by, was it Stephen Baldwin, right? Played Bo Dietl in the movie.
Which movie?
With his like flippy hair. He played Bo Dietl in some, there was like a biopic about him.
Was it? I didn't know that. That's funny.
Really?
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Look that up, Shannon. Maybe am I wrong? But no, I know.
It's funny that he
biopic about Bo Dietl.
I think so.
Baldwin? Yes. I don't know.
It's a One Tough Cop, the Bo Dietl story. It was.
Yeah. Oh my god!
I never heard of this.
I think people didn't know that's a like if you just saw the movie and didn't know the name, and then you found out who Bo Dietl was, it wouldn't like even capture, because it was played by Stephen Baldwin with like perfect young Leo DiCaprio flippy hair and just like leather jackets, and you see Bo Dietl, he's like a short little like Italian-y tough guy.
He's a really great dude, Bo.
I really like him a lot. He's a really good dude.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
By the way, what I love is, so you have a son, I think he's 8 now, I could be wrong, but...
Yeah, you're right.
His name is Valor, and your sister's son's name is Honor. Whose idea was it first? Like, Honor. Who did Honor was
I
first?
I ripped Honor's name off.
Hey, that's cool.
It's so funny, because like to this day, if they're together, I'll get their names confused and I'll call them the wrong names. And it's like my son and my nephew.
That's so funny. It's a cool name.
Like,
Valor.
Oh God, sorry guys. You guys, I mean, they're such similar names and they sound similar too.
But at least Valor, you can call Val for short. What are you gonna call Honor? I guess. By the way, ridiculously, the true story, a friend of mine in high school, his name was Josh Order, and he named his first daughter Lauren. So her name is Law and Order.
So Law and Order.
And he did that on purpose, which is hilarious.
Wow.
What a dildo your friend is.
Yeah, I don't really talk to him anymore.
Like,
but
yeah, Law and Order.
Hey, isn't my daughter's name hilarious for the rest of her life?
Yeah.
Jake, question. Would you do it for $5 million, go back to the Immaculate Room? Would you try it 50 days in a room?
Me?
Yeah.
No.
Me
either. I don't do comedy overseas ever because they don't have our TV.
Even if it was $5 million?
I just don't think I'd make it.
That's the thing. I don't know. I know I wouldn't
really?
Make it. Yeah, I wouldn't make 50 50? Days.
Yeah. 50 days for $5 million? Dollars? Come on.
I'm too antsy.
I couldn't do it. Especially, there's no one in the world that I'd want to spend 50 days in a row with.
Oh,
there's
you're
nobody.
Right. No, you know what? If we're going back to the movie thing, like, I mean, when they send Ashley Green in, that movie.
Yeah, I would spend it with Ashley Green. Upticks. I'll do that.
Yeah, I got Kate Bosworth and Ashley Green in the same bed, and you get $5 million. I mean,
that I'll do.
You guys are tough customers, man.
All right, I don't know. We're setting up new circumstances here.
Yeah, if it's Kate,
there's
her,
a circumstance
Green,
I could be. There's a circumstance I could handle.
By the way, if it's Ashley Green, I'll pay you $1 million. How about that?
I was surprised at what she did in the movie based on, like, you know, I mean, I knew her as like the Twilight vampire. I have a daughter. That's why I knew her from that. And when she would go to sleep, I would watch Twilight. No, but it was surprising to see. And that was like the role, and it was awesome. Awesome fucking role too. Man.
Yeah,
it was
great. Yeah, really cool.
Really good.
And the whole fuck with you guys idea of it, like with the, I don't want to give away anything, but the little ways they fuck with you guys as it goes on was just brilliant. It was just really good. Jay, we don't have a lot of time with him. We got to ask the first, or we're going to run out of time.
Good. Yeah.
So we'll do that now.
The first time ever I saw concert Detroit's had sex.
Sorry, I'm coughing. I'm getting over a very
gross.
Bad cold. So the name of the show is the SDR Show, Sex, Drugs, and Rock and Roll Show. We've asked every guest this since the dawn of time, their first experience with all three. We start with rock and roll, and we just mean a concert you went to on your own. Doesn't have to be rock, just a concert you went to that you said, I want to go see this concert. And hopefully something we know, not some weird local band that we've never heard of.
Hirsch Live.
It was in Brisbane, Australia. I was 12 years old, and it was we got backstage passes to see the Foo Fighters.
Oh, wow. That's
because
great.
Because I was acting in this like TV movie called Gargantua, which is ridiculous. And we were shooting it on the Surfers Paradise. But the doctor, who's like the cast doctor, he like was the doctor to the stars in Australia. So he got us these tickets to see Foo Fighters. And like I like met Dave Grohl and like got my picture with him after and everything like
that's
that.
That's cool. That's
yeah,
great.
Like fully, like he was like super cool. And like,
how old were you at that time? You were a kid,
12.
Like
12. Yeah.
By the way,
and he was super nice. And I still have a picture of me and freaking Dave Grohl, and I'm like flipping the camera off, just like such a punk.
Have you? That's hilarious. Have you seen him since? Like, do you guys like know each other at all casually?
No, I haven't seen him since.
You know, they were trying
he
to
probably,
come up with a list.
I would guarantee you he doesn't remember.
Don't you might be surprised.
Don't you say that, Mr. Hirsch. So
it'd be funny if he doesn't know your acting work, but he just looks at you and goes, Brisbane, Australia.
Yeah, were you the kid that flipped the camera off?
Backstage?
That punk kid, that disrespectful brat.
They were saying there's only two people that I could come up with that went from one band to another and both bands were successful. Dave Grohl being one of the only that did that successfully in a band and then in another band. And the other one was the dude from the Gorillaz that's also from Blur. I don't know of any others. I can't think of any others. But anyway, we'll go to drug. The first drug you ever did after weed, unless weed was not your first drug.
After weed.
Because everyone's first usually is weed.
God. This is a harder question to answer than I would say. I mean, this sounds so dorky, but like, is alcohol, do you guys consider that a drug? I don't know.
Technically, but is that you did alcohol after weed?
I think so. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. So how old were you?
I would have been like 17 or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I was working on a movie in New York. And I had in my room, there was like a little mini bar, and I like was like opening the little mini bar bottles. And I remember I did a drawing of like Kurt Cobain or something, when it was like this pen drawing of Kurt Cobain. And I was like drinking these like mini bar bottles of like Bacardi or just something ridiculous like that. But I remember it was like, that was definitely like the first time I was like drinking and was like, what is this booze? You know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I don't really have like a lot of drug experiences. I'm a little bit square in that regard.
Yeah, but you're allowed.
That memory, I definitely
picks out.
Yeah, because it was like the first time where you're like, what is this shit? You know what I mean? And it was weird because I was like alone. It wasn't like, what is this shit with all your buddies? It's like, what is this shit as you're like journaling and drawing like this dark, depressing picture of Kurt Cobain? You know what I mean?
I like his little dance when he says that. What is this shit? He did that twice. I kind of dug
that. Yeah. Well, if you had seen my Instagram account, I'm in my specialty.
You know, it's a great thing to
Ralph. It's just so Ralph's going to be on his deathbed and he's going to be cursing my name about.
So
shit.
Is that your way of saying you're never going to approve my request, you son of a bitch?
Yeah, no, I will. I will.
I was going to say, you know, it's good that you didn't really get deep into that kind of shit. Because I remind you, I said a similar career, like in my as a fan of yours. I always thought of someone just does like kind of really cool shit all the time was Nick Stahl.
And
I just saw him in a new like horror movie he did. He's great. He's back.
I was very fortunate in, you know, I had a very sensitive system. I was just very sensitive, you know, like I remember I tried weed and I was like the dude that was like guaranteed to have a horrible panic attack every single time. You know what I mean? It was like, everyone would be like, yeah, man, like having a great time. And I would be like, there's like schizophrenia being unmasked here or some shit. You know what I mean?
The image behind you was in your head and that's where that came from.
It was very hard for me to like, and sometimes like I could like have a chill time and be like, this is cool. But most of the time it would be like, I feel like there would be a level of like existential anxiety that just other people just did not have. There's no way that other people regularly had this. It was actually kind of unique.
No, that's what makes you stop.
Jay, we got to ask the last one. The first time you had sex.
First time I had sex. I have to be very careful about how I say this story.
I like the intro, I'll tell you that much.
I literally, there's almost no way of saying the story without
Alicia Cuthbert. Got it. Good night.
I can't, it's very hard to like say that story.
All right. We're not gonna force you to say it if you can't say it.
Yeah,
you can't say it.
I was 18 years old. I'll say this, I had diligently waited till I was 18 until I was like met someone that I really liked. And I'm looking back on it, I'm like, I was super awkward when I was younger and I'm almost like, wish I waited even longer in a way or something like that. I mean, I definitely think like all my friends that like got laid like super early, you know, you always hear those like statistics where it's like the earlier you are, the like all the horrible things happen to you. And like I remember my friend's dad told us that. He's like, oh yeah, all the kids that get action are like super screwed up, you know. And yeah, there was definitely like a little bit of like, oh, maybe I should wait. But I was pretty stoked. I mean, I definitely didn't regret it afterwards.
Well, all right, that's the important thing. Okay, so Jay, before we wrap up, any other questions, Jay? Because we don't want
to. No. I know he has to get going.
And also, I did enjoy your character in Pursuit with John Cusack. I saw that earlier this year. I did enjoy that. So follow him at Emil Hirsch. Maybe he'll accept your friend request before mine.
Ralph, actually, I do have one question that I did want to ask. Lords of Dogtown, your long hair, was that your hair or did
that
they?
That was my hair.
Oh.
Dude, killer long hair.
That was my hair. And I went into Beverly Hills hairstylist, and I made him for 10 hours. I was like having him re-dye it and like recolor it, and we just kept going back and forth because I was like, man, this hair has got to be perfect. And he was like, by the end, he like wanted to blow his brains out. He was like so sick of doing the hair.
Did you keep it long for a while?
Almost there.
Did you keep it long for a while after?
No, because in the movie, I shaved my head.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
He made me shave my head on camera. And I remember I asked Heath Ledger, I was like, Heath, should I really shave my hair? And Heath was like, oh, I'd do a bald cap. And so I told the producer, I was like, maybe I can do a bald cap. And like Catherine Hardwick, the director, and John Linson, the producer, like flipped out. They were like, what the fuck? Like they were so mad at me. And like they put the pressure on me so hard. And they were like, you're not shaving your head. Like they freaked out. And then I like, Heath like abandoned me. I was like, Heath, like they're all mad at me. And he's like, what do you want me? And he like walked off. And I was like, so I had to like go back and be like, all right, I'm shaving my head. And they were like, okay. And then everyone was cool after that.
God That's damn, crazy. That hair was beautiful.
All right. The movie, The Immaculate Room with you and Kate Bosworth is out now. And dude, honestly, it was a pleasure to talk to you and really happy we got you on.
Thank you, Ralph.
So cool, man.
And we add a song every week to our playlist, the strshow.com/playlist. We will add Killer Bees because I did enjoy it. So we'll add that to the playlist and we'll see everyone next time on the STR show. But Jay, do your plugs.
BigJComedy.com. This weekend, if you're listening, I'm in Omaha. And then I'm the rest of the year, every weekend, I'm on the road. So come check it out leading up to my special taping at Skankfest in October. And it's going to be awesome. As, of course, Legion of Skanks and Bonfire on Sirius XM Faction.
Right, Shannon, your plug so we could ask the last question. Go ahead.
You can follow me on Instagram at ShannonLee6982 and listen to my podcast, The Thing Is Ding. We talk about bad dates, fighting, and ghosts. We have all sorts of interesting guests come on, and they tell their own personal experiences of their worst date experience, a time they got into a street fight, and an experience with the paranormal.
Okay, now answer this question only after we lock in everybody. So we'll see, does Emil believe in ghosts? And I think it's a hard one. I'm going with yes. Shannon?
Yes.
Jay?
I also think yes.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Yes.
All right. For across the board, we got it. All right. We'll add the Killer Bees. Follow me everywhere at I Am Ralph Sutton. My other podcast on health and wellness comes out every Monday called Good Sugar. And we're opening up our first location on 3rd Avenue and 69th Street at the end of September. Emil, thank you so much for being a part of the show, man.
Thank you, guys. I hope you guys had a good time.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but looks so new. The truth are fading, battered plaything. It's stunning what we'll stew when we are craving something savory. I'm certified, I feel so right on the money. Starving for honey, alluring hives with sweet tongues, call to the targets, bleaches the conscience. These killer bees around me, I can't make it through the swarm. They promise not to harm me, they just want a little more. Quite a show, all of us are coming, like then hug the windows, bars and curtains close. Careful what you're starting, they will never go in. Now they're all applauding. No one is safe from you, your best intentions. Pack of vengeance, I'd run but you got shoes. Now see me capsize, finally baptized. The Fahrenheit that burned twice, plan an escape route, finish your cake now. A coup d'etat, a kingdom patiently waiting, futile sedating. These killer bees around me, I can't make it through the swarm. Want a little more. Quiet.
Find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.